Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Welcome into Redacted on this Wednesday. I'm Clayton Morris.
I'm Natalie Morris.
And on this show, we tend to cover the stories the mainstream media ignores. And the mainstream media, though, is melting down. And the EU is melting down over Tucker Carlson going to Moscow. He's not left there yet. But, of course, he's been walking around and doing different interviews with individuals and going to see how sanctions have not actually worked inside of Russia, going to grocery stores, but he also sat down with Vladimir Putin. But this afternoon, the EU perhaps pushing towards sanctions against Tucker Carlson. We're going to talk about whether or not he should be allowed to fly, travel, barred, banned, all of that coming up in just
That's
a moment.
That's how afraid we are of certain narratives. That's what they think of you, that if you hear things they don't want you to hear, they should freak out and punish those who say it. So that's crazy. Also, we're going to talk about the primaries in Nevada, how President Trump won without even being on the ballot, and what a low turnout there was. Is this some tea leaves we can read, or are we reading too far into it? We're going to discuss that together.
Yeah, there's a lot of people not voting right now, so we're going to be interesting about that. We're also going to look at a new report about Vladimir Zelensky of Ukraine and what new real estate he has perhaps purchased, according to news reports. And his one of his biggest oppositions is now saying that he is getting ready to flee Ukraine. Of course, Victoria Nuland was there last week. What is going on here? Ex-CIA analyst Larry Johnson is going to join us to break down the latest rumors about Zelensky. All of that. Plus, we're going to talk mRNA and some problems there. Maybe you've heard about it, as Redacted starts right now.
Welcome to your Wednesday. It's hump day.
Hump them if you got them.
Make of that what you will.
Consensually, of course.
Right. Yeah. Thank you for joining us today. We have a lot of news to get to, a lot of busy work. That's a little loud.
Well, that's the sound of vodka.
Shall we wait until you're just... All right, pour yourself a drink. Get comfortable.
Get yourself a tumbler.
Off if you want. Relax. Shoes are off.
Johnny Nova is a new member here. Welcome to the Rebellion. Nice to see all of you guys. Let us know where you're joining us from around the world. I see people joining us from Iceland. Let us know if you're joining us from Australia, Canada, the United States. We've got a big global audience on Rumble and on YouTube and on X. How are we doing on X? I'm curious how we're doing over on the Twitter, former Twitter platform, David. Like, what's the...
We're
doing good, right?
We're doing good. I mean, obviously we've had over 5 million impressions in 3 months because we were finally monetized, and
people are responding
to polls, and people are sending pet pictures when we ask for them. So yeah, it's pretty active over there.
And the RX address or Twitter address is what? It's the Redacted INC. The Redacted INC on Twitter or X. It's just so much easier for me to say Twitter. But anyway, there's some other like fake accounts out there that have a similar name, but it's The Redacted INC on X.
Yes. People joining from East Africa, Florida, Denmark. Thank you so much. Finland. Thank you for watching and joining Redacted. So also, have you joined our Redacted email? This is our daily newsletter that you can find at redacted.inc. It is totally free. You can find it at redacted.inc. Click the newsletter, put in your email address, and then you'll get it every day. It's great with your morning coffee or eggs or whatever it is that you like in the morning. It's also good in the afternoon, like stale pizza. It ages well. There is no paywall here. There is nothing to upsell. It is totally free. We cover a lot of the stories that we're going to cover in the show later in the day, plus a few extra tidbits. Sometimes things don't make it into the show, but it's still fun for you to learn. So please do subscribe. Tell your friends about it. The newsletter is free. Redacted.inc.
Well, European lawmakers are reportedly considering banning and sanctioning Tucker Carlson over his interview with Russian President Putin. It almost sounds fake. I mean, it sounds like fake news, or it sounds like a Babylon Bee headline. But no, it's real, because there he is apparently aiding a war criminal, according to the EU members of parliament. A former Belgian prime minister, current member of the European Parliament, who is calling for the EU to impose a travel ban on the former Fox News host, as they say, that told Newsweek. So Newsweek called up, and I guess was calling around Parliament all over the EU. Hey, what about that Carlson? What do you guys think?
And, how dare he travel abroad to a place we don't like?
Yeah, they're calling him a mouthpiece for former President Trump and a mouthpiece for Vladimir Putin. And therefore, he's assisting a war criminal, and then he should be arrested, sanctioned, wind up like Julian Assange. Really? Is this what we're talking about now?
Has anybody been sanctioned for interviewing George Bush or Obama or
right? Yeah, good question.
Cheney.
Right. Yeah, I sat down with Dick Cheney. Well, I mean, he's a war criminal. You should be locked up for interviewing a war criminal.
That's a good point.
Well, that's the thing, though. It's like, let's say, like, benefit of the doubt. Let's say, okay, he is. He's allowed to be if he wants to be. Like, what the hell? Like, if I wanted to be a mouthpiece for somebody, I'm allowed to do that. Isn't sure. that sort of like constitutionally yeah. protected?
Right. You'd think.
I would think.
Well, you're constitutionally protected in the United States, right? But I guess in the European Union, of course, they don't really have those liberties, right? So I guess they can. We've seen this in Germany, you know, going after journalists for their reporting in Ukraine. We've already seen that. And so there's a number of countries now in the European Union that are specifically doing that. So they don't have the same freedoms that the United States enjoys. Anders Asland tweeted this just a few minutes ago. Yes. And he's an author, writes about Putin. He says the EU should sanction Tucker Carlson because he is no journalist, but a leading Kremlin propagandist. The EU has rightly sanctioned a score of leading Kremlin propagandists and many Europeans for various reasons. It would be a mistake not to sanction Tucker Carlson. I mean, just let that sink in for a second. He's supposed to be an academic, right?
And he's gone over the European Union. He didn't even stop in the European Union. So what does this have to do with Europe at all, other than the fact that they're so willing and desperate to sell a war?
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Well, you know what else I find funny about the whole thing? It's like a lot of the criticism that these people give about Putin is how he treats journalists. I mean, that's like one of the biggest criticisms. It's like, look at what he killed journalists. Look what he's done to journalists.
Right,
and I mean, then that's what they're calling for on a yeah. journalist.
Yeah, I guess they're saying that about him. Meanwhile, the mainstream media is losing their mind too. So it's not just the political class. Mainstream media around the world. It's not just the United States. It's BBC. They're losing their mind over Tucker announcing that he's completed an interview with Putin. They're calling him every name in the book, of course, far right wing propagandists, Putin stooge. They can't handle it. And they're mostly pissed about this part, at least the mainstream media is. They're mostly pissed about this part of Tucker's statement last night. Watch.
And yet the populations of the English speaking countries seem mostly unaware. They think that as nothing has really changed. And they think that because no one has told them the truth. Their media outlets are corrupt. They lie to their readers and viewers. And they do that mostly by omission. For example, since the day the war in Ukraine began, American media outlets have spoken to scores of people from Ukraine, and they have done scores of interviews with Ukrainian President Zelensky. We ourselves have put in a request for an interview with Zelensky, and we hope he accepts. But the interviews he's already done in the United States are not traditional interviews. They are fawning pep sessions specifically designed to amplify Zelensky's demand that the U.S. enter more deeply into a war in Eastern Europe and pay for it. That is not journalism. It is government propaganda, propaganda of the ugliest kind, the kind that kills people. At the same time, our politicians and media outlets have been doing this. promoting a foreign leader like he's a new consumer brand, not a single Western journalist has bothered to interview the president of the other country involved in this conflict, Vladimir Putin.
River Deep Mountain High in on our Rumble chat says, because they're watching in Australia right now, breakfast television in Australia. Good morning down there, down under. Says there's no mention of any war or Tucker on breakfast television here in Australia. Yeah, isn't that shocking? See, you have to go to the alternative media. You literally can't get this in your mainstream media, and they won't allow it. They won't cover it, and they won't tell you the truth about what's going on.
You know, last night when this broke, I watched this, and I thought, sounds reasonable, because the mainstream media has been lying about the war in Ukraine, but they don't know it, because mostly they don't study. They just take what the White House says for its word, and they run with it, and they are so committed to the Putin is a madman narrative that they don't dig for themselves. And so they are largely ignorant. So I thought to myself, well, maybe they'll dig when they see this. What can you say against someone that says we should hear all sides? Maybe this will shut them up. The lengths to which they have gone to discredit this and make it so that you don't watch it really upset me this morning. It was the first thing that I sort of consumed this morning while looking at to write the newsletter. And I just couldn't believe how dishonest and ignorant and how committed to ignorance they are in their attempts to discredit this before they've seen it.
Yeah.
It made me really, really sad, actually.
I'm just waiting for Rachel Maddow to do her little piece. Like, we were going to play some of the clips of the Tucker Putin interview, but we feel like we can't be putting out this information because it's false and we don't want you guys to see it.
We'll put it through our sieve.
And we'll tell you what you should see.
Yeah.
Right.
So that clip I just played of Tucker, where he's basically talking about, interviewing Putin, and of course them lying and how these media outlets are corrupt. That's what made them upset. That, of course, video has now been watched tens of millions of times, not just on his own Twitter feed, but it's been repurposed all over the world.
You know what else this made me think of is the fact that Tucker Carlson now is a template for a mainstream media journalist who's fired on the eve of war. And we had that already in Phil Donahue. Phil Donahue didn't have the reach of the internet to then say, well, then I'm going to tell you what you're not being told. I'm going to tell you the things that I was fired for trying to say. He didn't have that option.
Yeah, he was anti-war, Phil Donahue. Yeah, he spoke out against war. He called BS on globalists, Phil Donahue did. He called BS on warmongers.
Right.
And the
so
lies.
We're now seeing the beauty of the internet. I know there's a lot of ugly around the internet, but the fact that he can say, nobody was going to put Phil Donahue on the air to give him this chance.
This is the Streisand effect on steroids.
Yes.
Is what this is.
Yes. Yeah.
For those of our audience that don't know what the Streisand effect is, can you explain?
It has to do with her home on the... you want to? Go ahead.
Or David, who brought it up.
Go ahead. No, it's fine.
You go ahead.
Okay. So it's just basically there was a... I can't remember like the exact situation where Barbara Streisand was getting ridiculed or whatever, and she tried to hide the information. And then by trying to hide it, it got elevated. And so anytime somebody tries to hide information, the opposite happens and it ends up getting more coverage than they wanted it to. So that's now called the Streisand effect.
I believe it was specifically her mansion on the cliffs of Southern California that she didn't want it publicized, or the address or where it was or the size of it or something like that. It's trying to hide
something.
Yeah,
it was something small and crazy like that. But yeah, then it just completely exploded. Then everyone knew.
All right, let's get back to this clip. So the clip that I just showed you, let me just refresh your memory. Tucker talked about the corrupt media outlets, and he talked about the problems with journalists not wanting to interview Vladimir Putin, or at least not trying to get that side of the story out. They've been fawning over Zelensky for many, many years now, cover of Time magazine. So that part of it really set their hair on fire, really set these journalists' hair on fire. So here's just a sampling of their responses today. Take a look at this tweet from this guy. Please stop saying that Tucker is interviewing Vladimir Putin. Putin is just paying Tucker to spread his propaganda. He's Putin's mouthpiece, as the cartoon depicts here. No, Putin did not pay Tucker for that. Here's another one. Stephen Morin says, make no mistake, Putin's poodle, Tucker Carlson, is a sub-Benedict Arnold piece of shiite. Okay, so Benedict Arnold. I mean, literally, are you really? an American, turncoat who, you know, then goes to Britain as a result of his turncoatness. Really? That's what you're comparing him to? One of the greatest known traitors in American history? Really? He's a traitor to the American people. If you think about that in those terms, what you're saying is that Tucker Carlson going to interview Vladimir Putin to get truth out, perhaps, maybe we don't even know the interview, right? What is about this war, Americans spending tens of billions of dollars to funnel into this war machine and this propaganda machine to get us into a world war, that's anti-American? Really? That's pro-American, because you're asking the question, well, how does this benefit the United States to throw tens of billions of dollars into Ukraine and to have an entire country destroyed mm-hmm. on the backs of NATO aggression? That's a good question. I would want to know that. And then go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say really quick, and that's Twitter. So I noticed that that you didn't click on the second tweet after those main tweets. I'm sure they cited all their sources to show that Putin has paid Tucker, right? Like, they probably have all the information posted there and cited so we can check it out.
No, they didn't. They didn't have any of that. It's literally, they don't have any of that. Christiane Amanpour tweeted this. You know, she's a journalist from CNN. She says, does Tucker really think we journalists haven't been trying to interview President Putin every day since his full-scale invasion of Ukraine? It's absurd. We'll continue to ask for an interview just as we have for years now. Okay. So she's saying that they've been asking Putin every day to be interviewed. That's interesting. So why did they turn you down? Is it because of your totally one-sided biased reporting on other major world events like Syria, for instance? As Syrian journalist Kavor Kalmasian tweeted about this, about Christiane Amanpour, because you have a track record of not really doing journalism, but rather delivering threatening messages from the American deep state. What is he talking about? I mean, here's a sampling of exactly what he's talking about, his interview with Bashar al-Assad. Take a look.
Mr. President, you know the rhetoric of regime change is headed towards you from the United States. They are actively looking for a new Syrian leader. They're granting visas and visits to Syrian opposition politicians. They're talking about isolating you diplomatically and perhaps a coup d'etat or your regime crumbling. What are you thinking about that?
I feel very confident for one reason, because I was made in Syria. I wasn't made in the United States, so I'm not worried. This is Syrian decision. Should be made by the Syrian people, nobody else in this world. So we don't discuss it in Syria.
What would happen, do you think, if there was an alternative to you? Who is the alternative to you?
Could be any Syrian, any national Syria, and we have a lot. I'm not the only person who is eligible to be president. We have a lot of Syrians, so we don't have any problem about that. But no Syrian would be allowed to be president if he's made anywhere outside our borders. This is a Syrian principle.
So, you know what the regime, all it talks about, regime change. They want you out of here. They want you out of here. Who would be a good replacement for you?
This is not even the most egregious. We've seen her coverage of Israel, and it's just abominable. It just basically is all about how the United States needs to continue to support Israel. No questions asked, civilians be damned. And, you know, even if it gets horrific, more horrific than it already is, what are we going to do? Because we have to keep doing it. There's no critical thinking in her coverage of that conflict. We've gone over it and over it and over again, over it.
I was going to point out that I feel like she said it right in her tweet. She calls it an invasion when we've learned that it's more of a liberation than an invasion, right? So like that alone, anybody who calls it an invasion, in my opinion, has not been educated.
That's a really good point. I missed that. You're right. She's missing the nuance of this conflict, which is in and of itself a repeat of state lies.
So BBC is also pissed. Steve Rosenberg said this. He works for the BBC. Steve said, interesting to hear Tucker Carlson claim that no Western journalist has bothered to interview Putin since the invasion of Ukraine. We've lodged several requests with the Kremlin in the last 18 months. Always a no for us. Always a no for us. I wonder why the BBC, the biggest propaganda newsroom in the world, arguably, they turned down for an interview. I don't know. And can you, by the way, this is the same British government, the state-run media, that literally told the Ukrainian government, talked them out of a peace agreement. You're going to invite the state. You're literally inviting the government of the United Kingdom into the Kremlin for an interview? Really? Okay, maybe.
Well, and also selective editing, like these channels like CNN, BBC, infamous for selective editing.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
You'll never see the full interview. Are you kidding me? So Jen Psaki had this to say, you know, former mouthpiece of the Biden regime, the warmongering Biden regime, had this to say. Listen.
It might be worth asking yourself, since it is getting pretty serious, what is this really about? Why do I hate Putin so much? Has Putin ever called me a racist? Has he threatened to get me fired for disagreeing with him? So why does permanent Washington hate him so much? If you've been watching the news, you know that Putin is having a border dispute with a nation called Ukraine.
Border dispute is certainly one way to characterize a major military invasion. Of course, Carlson is now just another far-right conspiracy peddler with a show on the internet. He's no longer on Fox, as we all know. And he's apparently been spending the last few days in Moscow for some reason. Who knows? We don't know why. He has to stay relevant somehow, so I guess we'll learn in the coming days. Maybe.
Jealous much? And girl, yeah, study. Study the conflict then. That is so upsetting.
Yeah, has to stay relevant somehow. His numbers, his viewership numbers, absolutely destroy your viewership numbers, Jen Psaki. Has to stay relevant somehow. Our show here on YouTube and Rumble has better numbers than most of the MSNBC broadcast numbers. Here on YouTube, our show has to stay relevant, Jen Psaki. Really?
One piece of Tucker's content probably gets more views than her show does in a year.
Yes. Yes.
Most likely.
Absolutely. The
she
case.
Doesn't do that in even a month. Even she won't.
No.
But even let's talk about the substance of it, right? Because who is she interviewing? She's interviewing, you know, intelligence community shills who are on the payroll, part of the deep state. She's interviewing, she's interviewing
Mayorkas.
She interviews
White House.
Rachel Maddow.
Right. She interviews
someone
Joy
who's
Reid.
Another journalist on her show to get her on her network to get her take. I hate to use this term. It's a circle. You know what?
Circle jerk.
Yeah, it's yeah. Exactly what it is.
I was thinking the same thing. I was thinking the same word. That's
yeah,
what it
it's
is.
Like, it's who,
ugly
who from our network at MSNBC could we have on our show this afternoon to really get to the heart of the matter? Or
we could
go interview Assad, or we could go interview the president of Iran, by the way. Lester Holt did that last year, by the way. Where is the crime of Lester Holt from NBC News who went and sat down with the president of Iran? I mean, the list is endless for the people that sat down with world leaders and who have then come back into the United States. It's unbelievable that they would have this moaning outrage. And they haven't even seen the interview yet. That's the best part of it. The interview drops tomorrow at 6 p.m. Eastern time on Tucker's channel, by the way. Tomorrow, I think it's 6 p.m. Eastern time, right? So they haven't even seen the interview yet, and they're crying about it.
I mean, I would like to volunteer as a guest. If you'd like someone to make an argument on your network that this is more, is it not an unprovoked invasion, but something completely different than that, and I'll bring my maps, and I'll bring my history lesson, I am available. So if you don't want to just interview people who are already on your network, now I get it, I'm an alumni, I was on MSNBC before, I will come back. I'm available so that you don't think it's so funny. The idea of a border dispute. I just would like to put that out there.
Well, hold on a second, because our time might be split if Erin Burnett over at CNN wants to have anybody here from Redacted on her show. We'll educate her about what's going on in the world and what's happening in Ukraine, what's happening in Russia, and what's happening geopolitically in the Middle East right now. Erin Burnett, of course, a mouthpiece of the deep state and CNN. This one really takes the cake. I think Erin Burnett calling Tucker a member of the MAGA GOP and worse. Watch.
Set. A massive shakeup in Kyiv coming as Putin is trying to court the MAGA GOP in the United States. In fact, one of the leaders of the MAGA GOP is in Moscow tonight. It's the man you see here with the MAGA leader Donald Trump, Tucker Carlson. Possibly there in Moscow to interview Putin. Definitely there as a Putin-supporting celebrity. Just listen to how Russian state media is breathlessly celebrating his visit.
Independent journalist Tucker Carlson has flown to Russia from the U.S. via Turkey to Vnukovo Airport. He saw Spartacus Ballet at the Bolshoi Theater, had lunch in a nice restaurant, went for a ride around town, rode the subway. He charged his smartphone via a USB port and connected to a fast and free Wi-Fi internet.
He charged his phone. Although they're knowing the details about the fact that it was during USB port may give him reason to think twice about all of this. But look at them talk.
First of all, just a side comment on that. How is that breathlessly praising his arrival? They're literally giving him like a point by point of what he did. If the Pope arrived in the United States, if I was on the air at Fox News at the time when the Pope came to Philadelphia, I would have said, first he went here. He went to Independence Hall. He then went to the Liberty Bell. He then met with a group of, Girl Scouts or Boy Scouts who...
They cover where Taylor Swift has lunch before a Chiefs game.
Right.
That's news.
And also, to me, that sounded more like he was praising like the infrastructure in Moscow. Like he went to...
We have great ballet.
He went to the ballet, which we're known for. He went and he saw our subways, which we're proud of because they're clean and they don't have homeless people defecating on top of rats with a pizza. Like... It was almost like he was breathlessly praising Moscow, not so much Tucker Carlson. Anyway, back to the video. Go ahead.
Talking about him like a celebrity. Everything he does on camera, breathlessly repeated. Now, it is unclear if an interview between Putin and Carlson will take place, but if it does, it gives Putin a chance to sit down with a big supporter.
It might be worth asking yourself, since it is getting pretty serious, what is this really about? Why do I hate Putin so much? Has Putin ever called me a racist? Has he threatened to get me fired for disagreeing with him? Does he eat dogs? These are fair questions, and the answer to all of them is no. Vladimir Putin didn't do any of that.
I love that.
I'll actually always remember why.
That's the same freaking clip that these guys want to keep using over and over again.
What did he do to you?
Like Jen Psaki plays the same thing.
Right.
You know, what did he do to you? And I love the breathlessly. He just breathlessly praises, you know.
That's what I meant in our text message this morning. Like the memo went down. The memo from the top went down to all the news agencies. And so we're going to see this same exact clip, this same exact story over and over and over again until
breathlessly. You know, breathlessly.
Yeah. Watching that clip, I was standing in Ukraine 48 hours before the war began there. Well, Carlson then stood by Putin consistently all the way through. And that is why he can go to Moscow now without any fear of being summarily imprisoned. He's a hero. This was Putin's mouthpiece in the United States, somebody who had turned a blind eye to the atrocities committed by Putin because they were happening far away. Once vibrant towns turned to ruins, mass graves with dozens of bodies in the Kyiv suburbs, a theater full of innocent women and children sheltering, bombed despite the giant word children written on the roof, more than 200,000 Ukrainian soldiers killed or injured. And tonight, Putin is trying to seize on the fact that Zelensky's military appears to be in turmoil, capitalizing on a moment of intense American political dysfunction and intensifying.
Yeah.
Silver Charm, you know, in the chat says she eats dogs.
Right. She's just randomly throwing out things, you know, child dead, roof collapsed.
Oh, I'm so curious, though. Did you miss the two civilian bombings that Ukraine carried out in the last 2 months? Did you miss that? One was at a bakery and the other one was at a farmer's market.
I'm sure she told me.
Did you know about that? Because you were in Ukraine 48 hours before the war began. So I'm just curious if you caught all the civilian attacks that had been for a precedence of 10 years. So curious. Or did you just get the ballet tour that was in Ukraine?
Wouldn't it be amazing if she did the opposite and just rattled off all of the things that actually happened? Like, Minsk agreements shattered. Peace agreement destroyed at the hands of Ukraine.
Zelensky ordering an attack on Crimea. Yes.
Yeah. State media destroyed, gone, blocked, sold off. Churches closed, priests taken out. Journalists killed, by the way, U.S. journalists. Where's Aaron Burnett's outrage at U.S. journalists being killed in Ukraine? That's a good question. Does she cover Gonzalo Lira at all on her channel? I didn't see her covering that at all.
She's sitting in a multi-million dollar studio, and we're in a small studio. Tucker's in a small studio, but we can at least focus our cameras because she was not in focus that whole segment.
That's what was bothering you? Okay.
Yes.
While we're at it, I didn't like that blowout.
I'm in my attic, and we have more viewers than CNN does, which I'm proud of. So yeah, that's how the mainstream media is responding to this. Are you guys subscribers here to the channel? We're live every day at 4 p.m. Eastern here on this channel. I was messaging with Tucker about what he was seeing in Moscow, and he was saying the story that people don't understand. And he was saying, I can't believe how clean the city is, how beautiful it is. And he said, he's going shopping. And then we saw some photos today of him actually doing that. So I'm going grocery shopping. And he said, I think the sanctions here have made Russia tremendously stronger, much stronger than the West even knows about. Which
I wonder
is amazing.
If that would be true of his own personal sanctions, if that became a thing, yeah. It would strengthen his brand. If an entire block of countries decided, because you did this and we don't stand for free speech, yeah, we will sanction you, meaning you cannot have any assets inside the European Union or else we'll take them, or we will make it so that you cannot no longer travel inside the European Union, there would be a revolt. If that actually happened, one, because it would sort of bastardize everyone who's an American passport holder, make them think that if the European Union doesn't like what you do, you can be punished. It also would just weaken the American passport, so it would put egg on the face of the State Department. So I don't see that happening, but the fact that it's even being suggested. But again, it would maybe we could call this the Trump effect, is the more the mainstream hates you, the more popular you become. So perhaps that would be the case. Who knows?
Yeah, I mean, who the hell's watching CNN and MSNBC anyway? I mean, no one's watching those crap channels unless you're at the freaking airport and you're stuck watching it. You know, it's garbage. But, you know, anyway, let us know your thoughts on that. I just saw someone in the chat say, did Gonzalo Lira die? Matt Derling wants to know. Yes, he was killed by the Ukrainians in their prison system. So, yes, that did happen.
I was just going to point out really quick also, like regarding Rachel Maddow, like obviously they're not even keeping the small viewership that they have happy, because she came back and like retracted after they didn't show Trump. She's like, we're going to show it this time, because you know they got so much backlash from their own audience that they had to make that decision to show him talking the next time when they didn't the first time. You know what I mean? Like that, right. They didn't just make that decision. They had to have got a ton of backlash. So their audience is dwindling.
You know, last night when we talked about how there is this pending interview coming, we talked collectively about how maybe we are wrong. Maybe we on Redacted have missed something. Maybe we're not right about certain parts of the conflict, and we will learn them from this interview with Putin. That, I think, is how the mainstream should approach this. Maybe you're wrong. Maybe there's something to learn. Maybe you missed something. It's possible. There's no humility here. They're like, oh no, we will learn nothing. We're just going to crap on you for doing this in the first place. So,
but I think the difference is they're wrong intentionally. That's the difference. If we're wrong, it's unintentional. They are wrong intentionally, because they have an agenda and a message coming down from a higher authority to tell them what to say. So it's intentional.
They're willfully ignorant about a lot of it.
Yeah.
Yeah,
because mainstream media, if they're wrong, that means the government, like the U.S. government, was wrong. And you can't have that. The U.S. government won't admit they were wrong until, like, everybody that was involved is dead. That's the only time they ever come back and say, yeah, we probably shouldn't have done that, or we were wrong. They don't do it while anybody's still alive that can be outraged. So it's like they can't admit that they were wrong, because that means that the government was wrong. Right.
Then you have a 20-year gap between when the thing happened and when you can say it was wrong now, like the war in Iraq. 20 years later, we can say that, but 20 years ago, you could not. And so that's why it feels increasingly dangerous to say right now, these wars are wrong.
We just got a super chat from PsyOps. Says, hey, did they give the same treatment to Dorothy Thompson or that other American journalist that interviewed Hitler? I don't think so. And they didn't give that same Dan Rather interviewing Saddam Hussein. 60 Minutes interviewing Saddam Hussein like 2 weeks before we went to war with him, when we were actively calling him a war criminal, literally, and holding up vials of stuff that we were going to go attack him. No, we didn't do any of that. Lester Holt, like I said, interviewing the president of Iran. No, this is just for Tucker Carlson.
Didn't Ronald Reagan sit down with Gorbachev? Like, I mean, what's the difference between a president sitting down with with these people, you know.
They're hypocrites. They're just jealous. Yeah. Let us know your thoughts on that. Yes, I said, as we are live right now. We're live every day at 4 p.m. Eastern time here on Rumble and on YouTube and on X. So please subscribe if you're new here. And if you are new, your name will pop up here on the big screen. So somebody just subscribed there. Thank you. Welcome to the rebellion. Yes, we always have the national debt clock up here on the screen as well. So the U.S. national debt is at $34 trillion right now and ticking up as we speak.
Yes, it is. Well, we have more news to get to. We're going to talk about the primaries in Nevada, how President Trump, I'm going to use this term now, had a President Trump, where the more they hate him, the more popular he became. He won the primary in Nevada, having not even been on the ballot, and we're going to show you exactly how. We're also going to talk about a new peer-reviewed study about the COVID vaccines. This is something I want to warn you that we cannot play on YouTube right now, so we're going to go exclusively to Rumble later in the show for that, because this study is full of things that we are still not allowed to say on certain social media platforms. I think you know what that is, but now this is a real peer-reviewed study. You need to see this, so prepare to jump to Rumble if you are not
but
already.
Not yet.
Stay here. We'll be here a little bit longer.
And I should mention, we're also going to talk about this Zelensky story. Ex-CIA analyst Larry Johnson is going to join us in a minute. He's the one that had been predicting, based on his intelligence sources, that Zelensky is not long for the leadership role in Ukraine and would be pushed out, and it looks like that is about to happen. We will bring you the very latest on that. But first,
we want to tell you about our friends over at Shopify, because when we first started this show, an online store was really not something we had thought about. We didn't see how great of an audience we would get, how much that you would be willing to show your support for Redacted. So when we decided to build redactedstore.com, we used Shopify because it was the easiest way to put together an online store so that we could bring you the products that we think you might know and love. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business, from the launch your shop online to the first real live store stage, all the way to, oh, we just hit $1 million stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Now, we haven't hit $1 million from the Redacted store yet. You're free to order to your heart's content so that you do. But Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout up to 36% better compared to other leading platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, which is your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S., plus Shopify's extensive help resources are there to help you succeed every step of the way. So sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redacted, all lowercase. One more time, that's shopify.com/redacted. Get a $1 per month trial period. One more time, that's shopify.com/redacted.
I just pinned a comment on our YouTube chat by OGL Brickwork, who says, Redacted makes the BBC look like a bag of piss.
Thank you.
Love that.
That's what we were going for. That's our mission statement.
And that sounds like that's a British person saying that, doesn't it? Like a bag of piss. That sounds like,
yeah.
Yes.
The BBC's bollocks.
Yeah, because and we're not taking the piss either.
Yeah, I'm taking the piss out of you.
No.
All right.
All right. Well, Nikki Haley lost the Republican primaries to Donald Trump in Nevada, and he was not even on the ballot. Joe Biden won the Nevada primary with just 14% of voter turnout, but even less Democrats. So are Americans resigned to vote for the same incompetent jerks that they've already got? It's hard to tell from these primaries because voter turnout is so dismal. But this is a headline that was resigning. It rang true to me today. Are unhappy Americans unhappy with politicians, they will soon vote back into office. So, okay, this is pessimistic, but it feels true. Does it feel true to you? Does it feel like change is coming, or does it feel like, yeah, this is what we got. We're not going to change. Or maybe it's us that might change, my local district, but not other people who will change. Well, I don't know. Is it that we hate them, but we're going to get them again? We really it's hard to read the tea leaves from these primaries, but Nevada is telling. So let's take a look. Here are the results from the Republican primary in Nevada on February 6th. And it is hysterical because Nikki Haley, who is actually on the ballot, got 30% of Republican voters, but 63%, that's 43,000 people, voted none of these guys.
Nobody, none of these candidates.
None of the above. We see here Mike Pence, Tim Scott, John Castro. No, none of these.
Heath Fulkerson. I'd vote for Heath Fulkerson before I'd vote for Nikki Haley. Are you kidding me?
I wonder if Mike Pence regrets getting out now, seeing that 4%. Like, that's higher than I thought he, you know, should have got.
Right. And so we're pretty sure that that 63% would go to Donald Trump. We can't be completely sure, but that's my read on it. What do you think? That 63% would otherwise be Donald Trump?
Yeah. I mean, hard to say, but it seems like that would be the case.
Going to say at least, let's count it as a vote for Donald Trump, and maybe we're off by about 10-15%. That's sort of how my take on it. Now let's look at the Democrats. President Biden won nearly 90% of the voters that turned out, but still 6,000 people showed up to vote for none of these candidates, which is 5%. So even the Democrats were like, we don't like them, none. Now, in terms of voter turnout in Nevada, how did they do? This is from the Nevada state website showing us the numbers. Interestingly enough, the people that showed up and the people that are versus the people that are actually registered. So this is how many voters Nevada has by about 100,000. Well, no, about 50,000 more Democrats than Republicans. Total voters, total registered voters, 2.29. So when you think about it, I just put a little tally of the numbers that we have. 2.2 million voters in Nevada. Look at my little chart here that I put together. Only 179,000 showed up. 2.2 million and about 180,000 people showed up. That's crazy, don't you think? That's so, so low. That's 7.8% total voter turnout in Nevada. So, so in a primary where you think people are fired up this year, they're still not showing up. Go ahead.
Well, yeah.
I think that's because this isn't the main primary vote. Like I because they already know Biden's the number one there. They already know they're not voting for Nikki or any of those other people because Trump's going to be on the official one. What next week or whatever.
Yeah.
So they will turn out for that one.
Right.
Possibly.
But again, Biden only got 4% of Nevada voters to show up for him. If that none of these people vote was representative of Trump, he still got nearly half of that, and he didn't even show up himself. So almost 2%. But even with that, only 7% of voters turning up. Now, we don't know how much to extrapolate from this. But again, this is less than half of the primaries for 2020. So look at the numbers for the 2020 primary. So many of them were mail-in ballots. So we can't know. It's just we can't know because the mail-in ballots changed the game so much in 2020 that almost half of the Democratic votes were mail-in. Their total votes were much higher than what we've got now. So is this the take then? Again, back to this Reason article, Americans unhappy with the politicians that they will soon vote in. If you look at this, take a look at if they say, to put this in perspective, the 24% who believe most members deserve reelection is lower than in all recent presidential election years, except 2012, when 20% held that view in the late 2011 survey, according to Gallup. They said they should have indicated some sort of change in the offing, but in 2020, amidst withering scorn for the legislative branch, 90% or more of the House members and the Senate who sought re-election won. So they're saying, this is Politico's Charles Mathesian, said this is near banana republic levels in 2012. So
the question is then, we know that over 100 million Americans simply don't vote in the election, right? Mm-hmm. They're so disenfranchised with both parties. They see both parties as corrupt. All you need to do right now is look at the border fight to see the corruption that Mitch McConnell and all of these clowns, there's just a few of them that you could stand out and say, like Thomas Massie, maybe Congressman Gates, just a few, like a handful of them. That's about it, though. Burleson, there's just like, again, but other than that, they're all part of this uniparty. And so you have 100 million Americans that are just done. And I think there's been so many people, of course, that were disenfranchised last time.
Yes.
They're like, well, I'm going to go vote this afternoon. Maybe I'm taking the day off work. I'm going to go vote. I'm proud to vote for whoever. And then they find out in the middle of the night, 3 a.m, wow, someone pulls up with a van.
Yeah.
Down by the river. And suddenly my vote, I thought counted. No, suddenly it doesn't seem like it does. Who knows? Right. And so it's very concerning. And how many Americans are going to sit out this next election? I know that's Donald Trump's fear, is that so many people are just going to sit home now.
Right. Hillary Clinton still takes that to the bank, that people just didn't vote because the press was predicting her win. And so she writes about in her book, which I didn't finish. I feel like I have to confess that people come up to her with their like adult children or something, and they'll say, apologize to her, apologize that you didn't show up, because otherwise she probably would have won. That this is her, she's taken that to the bank. She would have won, but people were so confident that she would win that she didn't win. Now, back to this Reason article, because what they are saying is that unhappy voters, like all of us, I think we can commiserate on that, right? We hate them all. We do.
Hate who?
Politicians.
Oh, politicians.
We don't hate voters.
Yeah.
Pretty much we hate both parties, and we hate everybody.
Nimrata.
Right? We commiserate on that.
Yeah.
It would have been really telling if they had added to the primary ballots a giant meteor striking the earth. And I bet you anything that would have beat all of them. Because I think we're just all so sick of these bastards. I'd just rather it just be
There's
done.
There's another line that says, put me out of my misery. People would have voted for that.
Yeah. But they're making the case that unhappy voters could change and shake up elections, but they just tend not to. Also, 32 House seats went uncontested in 2022. So a lot of it is just there's not enough competition, or there's no choices for us, and we're resigned. I love this line. It says, Americans are most angry at everybody else's congressional representation. That rings true, right? Here in, Georgia, we got it right, but it's those liberals up north, or the liberals think that it's the conservatives down south, that's the reason they're stuck with their plate. I thought that was astute. But what's at stake this year is clear to those of us watching. My son was asking me the other day, what are you guys? Are you Democrats or Republicans? And I said, well, Daddy and I were neither. They're all warmongers and liars. But I think one party causes the problems and the other party does not solve them. That's what I think. You should vote how you think. But I think at this point, we all have to decide what are your issues that you're voting for, maybe not the party or the people. But this is a high stake election, like Vice President Kamala Harris pointed out. It's the most.
Every election cycle we talk about, this is the most election of our lifetime. Lawrence, this one is.
It's the most. It is the most election of our lifetime.
It's the most.
Yeah. She always hits the nail on the head.
Right. We're in peak election. So let us know what you think of that.
The least election ever.
The least.
So we're in the most election ever. Oh, my God. I mean, there's a lot of, and there's a lot of rumblings what's going to happen now on the Democratic side, removing Biden. At what point? So show of hands, how many of you think that Biden lasts the spring on the ticket for president? I've said it here on the show. There is no way. I just cannot see it happening, how he becomes president of the United States again. I don't see it. I don't see how they're going to pull this off with him winning. I mean, maybe 83 million people will vote overwhelmingly again, and all of these people that are coming across the border, they're building up those votes as much as they can. Millions, of course, per month. So maybe he can get, from Guatemala and get a lot of the votes from Honduras, Somalia, Senegal. But I just don't see how
they're already tracking a lot of nefarity going on with this one, like there was in 2020. So, I won't get into that.
That part of it. I'm talking about being actually on the ballot to be voting for. Like, how many of you watching right now on Rumble and YouTube actually think that it's going to be that far beyond June of this year? Will it not be like Michelle Obama somehow on this ticket, or Kamala Harris being elevated to this this position. I just don't see how it's possible.
I've heard people speculating that because, like, the thing is, like, he's on all the ballots now, and somebody else, I guess, from what I understand, couldn't technically get on all the ballots at this point. So they're saying that something's going to happen, and it'll happen at the DNC, where they'll be like, oh, you know what? Biden is, he can't go on, blah, blah, blah. So then they have to pick somebody through some kind of vote or something like that that wasn't on the ballot to then put out, you know, that would be on the ballot for the general. So,
well, yeah, like I've said before, October, a lot of the ballots, of course, were, you had to be officially on the ballot by October in a lot of states. And so, you know, you can't really, I don't know how you're going to do that.
So people are speculating that that will be a Michelle Obama. That's the speculation I've heard from a lot of people.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
were you just texting me?
Oh,
I was thinking that too. Yeah. Have you guys watched the lady that... Natalie was just texting me.
I said we should play this meme of this lady who parodies Kamala Harris because it feels true. Can we take your laptop and show
connected,
them?
No.
Oh, okay. We'll bring it another time, or maybe we'll put it on our Twitter feed. So our X.
Well, that whole thing reminded me. I think I've sent it to you before, but that there was that TikTok video that guy did of the Are you really going to make me vote for Joe Biden? And he's just like, he's kind of like doing like a little sad dance. And I think of that anytime I think of this, I'm like, yeah, that's pretty much how everybody feels. Like, do we really have to vote for these people again? Like, come on, can I have anybody else? Anybody else?
Oh, yeah. Boy.
Well, that's exactly where we are right now, everybody.
Well, we're going to talk about ex-CIA analyst Larry Johnson is going to join us in moments because we're going to talk about this. Zelensky, is he out in Ukraine? And he's been predicting this for a while. I mean, he thinks that something nefarious is going to happen, but is he going to be just removed from office? We'll just keep it like, you know, we'll keep it nice for that, you know, in that way. But it seems like some real estate purchases that Zelensky has made at the end of December could be pointing to where he's going to be moving very, very soon. And Victoria Nuland was in Ukraine last week. So what was that all about? Well, we're going to get some clandestine information from Larry in just a moment. But first, we want to tell you about our friends over at Moomoo, because right now you can get up to 15 free stocks just for signing up with our friends at Moomoo. Now, it's my favorite trading app because I can set alerts. I can set all sorts of different advanced features inside of this app that I can't on other platforms. I've been using it for years, and I'm a big, big fan. They've been a long-time supporter of our show here at Redacted for a number of years now, so please support them. Again, when you open your account, you'll get 15 free stocks. When you sign up, you make your initial deposits in the account, and you don't even have to trade any stocks if you don't want to. You don't have to do any of that. In fact, they now have a savings account built in. So if you want to just put your money in there and then wait, and you want to maybe buy some commodity stocks or some oil stocks or steel stocks or something like that, or precious mineral stocks like I like to do with uranium and oil and things like that, then you can wait. And in the meantime, you're going to earn 5.1% APY on that money just sitting in your cash sweep account. So it's like a bonkers savings account. And right now, for a limited time, there's an additional 3% interest. So you're getting 8.1% interest just for keeping your money in that account. And then you can buy stocks, you can trade, you can, the 15 free stocks that you have in there, you can sell them, you can do whatever you want. And you can keep it in there for a few months and then close the account if you don't want it. But then you've made that additional interest and additional money in those free stocks. Totally up to you. But anyway, go check out our friends at redacted.inc/moomoo. That's redacted.inc/moomoo. Well, is Ukrainian President Vladimir Zelensky about to flee Ukraine? That's not us saying that. That's former U.S. intelligence insiders, of course, have been saying that for months. And now today, Ukrainian opposition politician Viktor Medvedchuk published an article saying the very same thing. In the article, he says that Zelensky recently purchased a $17 million luxury apartment in Dubai. In fact, he's not even just saying that. He's parroting what's already been reported in the news about this purchase. And he talks about this residence in the Bulgari Marina Lofts. Here you can see it in Dubai. It's at 600 square meters in the Jeremiah Bay Island. And apparently he's going there instead of to this villa in Florida, which I guess remains to be seen. Former CIA agent Larry Johnson was the first to report that Zelensky would be removed from office, according to his intelligence sources, and sent away. And Larry joins us now. Larry, I guess apparently this is all coming to fruition. I want to get you just what you think about this. what you make of this latest report, specifically in Dubai. What do you think of this?
Yeah, what we're witnessing is, you know, the soap opera, the, as the world turns. Mm-hmm. Well, now we've got our Ukrainian version, as Kiev churns. So you've got the sort of their version of ZZ Top. You got Zelensky and Zaluzhny, the battle of the little comedian with his prowess at playing the piano with appendages, and then big Zaluzhny, the general. And so Zelensky's going to get rid of Zaluzhny. And there's been a report, breathless report, almost every day. Oh, Zelensky's fired Zaluzhny. Zaluzhny's going to go to Britain as an ambassador. And then Zaluzhny turns around and goes, nah. He writes a long piece for CNN. So it's this back and forth. Now, there have long been rumors that Zelensky was buying a property all over the world and looking for making sure that he had an escape hatch. It's still up in the air who's going to wind up being shown the door. I always bet on the guy with the guns. Zaluzhny, General Zaluzhny, has the guns. So I think the odds are that Zelensky will be gone. But what this highlights, and in all seriousness on this, is when you've got this kind of disarray at the top of the leadership, then the military suffers, because below General Zaluzhny, you've got some brigadier generals, you've got colonels, you've got lieutenant colonels who are commanding battalions and regiments, and they're frozen. Who's going to make any kind of decision to take action in any one direction or another without the certainty that your decision is going to be backed up, or that you've got some support behind you? You don't know if Zaluzhny is going to be there next week or not, or if Zaluzhny is going to be up on top. Let's say you're one of the military guys who supports Zelensky. You don't want to be caught in a situation where you're backing Zelensky and then all of a sudden, you know, he's whooping it up in Dubai. So, I mean, it's a real mess. And then to top it off, we're beginning to learn that regiments and battalions that should be led by, say, you know, a major or a lieutenant colonel, they're being led by lieutenants because the officer corps in Ukraine has been decimated. So this is a mess.
I find it all curious, too, the timing. Victoria Nuland showed up there in Kiev, I think, last week.
Right.
Why? What does your sourcing tell you as to why she was there, what she was doing? And then suddenly you hear these reports about Zaluzhny, or this extended version.
Well, we learned that there's limits to Victoria Nuland's power. She showed up trying to put all these worms back in the can, and they weren't going. She thought that she had worked out a deal with Zelensky. And look, the problem with Zelensky is...
A deal with Zelensky to have Zaluzhny removed?
Yeah, to get to, you know, a peaceful transition of power, to lay everything out, so to minimize the disruption. Well, it didn't happen. You know, she failed. And this unraveling that we're witnessing is accelerating with each day, because right now the reports, you may have seen them today, the key city of Avdiivka in the Donbass, the Ukrainian troops are reportedly fleeing. They recognize they're now about to be surrounded, and they're trying to get out best they can. So the military situation there is turning south for Ukraine very rapidly. And Zelensky's power base initially was he came into office with the promise that he was going to end the war. And that's why he got the most votes. And, you know, he's not the first politician to have lied about, you know, I'm going to do X, and he turns out doing A. But now his popularity, I think he's less popular than Joe Biden, and that's saying something.
I want to read a quote from this Medvedchuk article that he wrote about Zelensky, and I think this is a powerful paragraph, so just allow me here. We'll put it up on the screen.
Sure.
Zelensky claims that Ukrainians are fighting for themselves, for their existence. But this is a cynical lie, he says. There is no genocide in the territories that have joined Russia. And the Russian Federation provides comprehensive assistance to former citizens of Ukraine. Russian President Putin has repeatedly stated that Ukrainians are not enemies to Russians, so the defeat is waiting for Zelensky's power, not the Ukrainian people. Mm-hmm. Today, Ukrainian soldiers are dying not for Ukraine, which the authorities sold to the West, but for the corruption schemes on which this power is enriched. And he says, so according to Medvedchuk, so this rat, meaning Zelensky, dug another hole to escape to Dubai. I mean, that's a powerful paragraph. And we should point out, in all fairness, right, he's Zelensky's biggest opponent, I think, arguably. He was banished to Russia, so he has that freedom, I guess, to speak extemporaneously from Russia. It's not like he's hanging out in the, you know, in parliament in the middle of Ukraine.
Yeah. Well, what's going on here is that Zelensky's credibility is gone. And compare and contrast the kind of casualties that are occurring in Gaza, where the Israelis are just slaughtering civilians right and left. And yet the Russians are not. They have the ability to do what Israel's doing in Gaza, but they're not leveling the cities. They're not destroying, telling people to go gather in one place for safety and then bombing them. Russia's taking great care to try to limit its attack on military targets. And that's one of the reasons it sort of frustrates some people in the West, that the Russians are steamrolling them and doing shock and awe like the United States would do, where we would kill without regard to civilian casualties. But the Russians aren't behaving that way. And so they are creating this tremendous contrast between what Zelensky is, who claims to be a Democrat, but he's canceled the elections for next month that are supposed to take place in March, jailed opposition political figures, shut down the media, closed down the churches. So across the board, he's acting like a complete tyrant. Everything that people say that Vladimir Putin is, the reality is that's Zelensky. And this kind of psychological projection is not going to save Zelensky. I think his days are numbered, personally.
So this Dubai story, I mean, he may not even wind up in Dubai. It's going to be interesting.
He'll be lucky to get out without a bullet in the head. Hmm.
I want to talk to you more about this Avdiivka story because, yes, as Ukrainians are fleeing there, and now this was sort of seen. Can you paint a picture for our audience why this city has been so important from a NATO perspective? If I'm not mistaken, NATO really put a lot of eggs into the Avdiivka basket here, really using this as like a stalwart. A bulwark, right. I guess, is the better word to use, against Russia. And if this falls, this is a major development.
Yeah, it was heavily fortified. What, you know, when this whole thing started, I had not followed the war in Ukraine that closely in the previous years. But what we came to understand is that Ukraine, since 2014, has been building up these extensive fortifications throughout the Donbas, which includes the republics of Donetsk and Luhansk. And now Luhansk is basically under Russian control, local control. But the Donbas is still about 50% controlled by Ukrainians. And some of these cities, like Avdiivka, which had a coke plant for making steel, not making cocaine. There's been some jokes floating around that Zelensky's saying, you got to keep a hold of that coke plant, because he thought it was cocaine.
Right.
But they heavily fortified it with underground bunkers, tunnels, et cetera. And it was a key logistics hub. And now that once they take control of this, it's going to break up Ukraine's ability to put in place a defensive line that will inhibit the Russians from reaching the Dnieper River. So this is the fall of this is more important than even the fall of Bakhmut. And, you know, we've gone back over, if you trace the various offensive before Bakhmut, it was Soledar, before Soledar, Lysychansk, you know, going back. But the Russians are steadily grinding forward. What has changed in the last 3 weeks, as all of this leadership turmoil has bubbled to the top, is that the Ukrainian forces are collapsing in that area. And it's not a coincidence. Without stable military leadership, the soldiers are going to have trouble fighting. And let's not kid ourselves that Zaluzhny, the general, was some sort of great military mind. You know, he's failed in every battle that he's fought so far against Russians.
Who will run the show? I mean, will it be Zaluzhny if Zelensky's out and pushed out?
That's what's concerning, what's going on here, because Zaluzhny represents really the neo-Nazi faction of this Ukrainian movement. Yeah, he's closely aligned with the Bandera folks, with the Azov battalions, the Kraken battalions, which are blatant neo-Nazis. They've got the Nazi imagery, etc. Zelensky's power base came from a Jewish supporter, and so he's always been this convenient prop to present to the West as, look, we're not Nazis, we got a Jew. You know, he's the token Jew. They trot him out, and they're, how can they be Nazis? They've got a Jewish president. Well, he's not really in charge, as we have seen in his confrontation with Zaluzhny. He said, you're fired. And Zaluzhny said, have a nice day. Walked out the door and is still on the job.
Well, we're going to see here where he winds up. Will it be Dubai? Will it be down your neck of the woods down there in Florida? You might have a neighbor.
He said he's coming to Vero Beach. I've got a friend that lives there. She said, if he shows up in Vero Beach, I'm moving.
Can you imagine? I mean, wow. In the state of social media and journalism today, if Zelensky winds up living in Florida, it's going to be an unbelievable story. Dubai might be a little bit easier for him. He might have some more cover there, but there's still quite an international group of journalists who would be on the ground there in Dubai covering that story. Larry Johnson, great to see you as always. Thank you so much for this. We appreciate it.
All right, Clayton, good to be with you, man.
You bet. Thanks, Larry. And can you imagine, like, you're in Florida and, like, I don't know, you're going to like Lenny's in Clearwater, Florida, going to get some good breakfast there, and all of a sudden you sit over there and there's like, he's sitting there eating eggs and bacon.
Oh,
like,
you just better hope he doesn't run into Dan Cohen.
Yeah.
You get the Dan Cohen treatment.
Or me, sitting there at Lenny's at my Philly's breakfast spot. I'd be like, what the hell is this guy doing in here? Like, can we get some cameras?
Trudeau would be like, Vladimir.
Right.
Right.
If you missed it, a couple months ago, we had Dan Cohen. He found a guy who was a politician from South America.
Colombian president, I believe.
And he talked to him on the street saying exactly what he always felt like he wanted to say, called him an asesino.
Right.
We'd like to get Dan Cohen on that one if you would like to seek that out. That's a fun one.
All right. We've got more news to get to here. We're going to talk about this mRNA study. Wait till you hear this coming up. We won't be able to do that, though, on this platform. So we're going to move over in just a moment to our other, where we are live with 25,000 of you watching over on Rumble right now. So we'll be there exclusively here in just a moment. But first,
we want to tell you about our friends over at Tax Network say, because if you owe back taxes, well, pandemic relief is now over. Along with hiring thousands of new agents and field officers, the IRS has kicked off 2024 by sending over 5 million pay-up letters to those who have unfiled tax returns or balances owed. That's nice, isn't it? Doesn't feel good to get a letter like that. So don't waive your rights and speak with them on your own. They're not your friends. Tax Network USA is a trusted tax relief firm, and they have saved over $1 billion in back taxes for their clients, and they can help you secure the best deal possible. Whether you owe $10,000 or $10 million, they can help you, whether it's business or personal taxes, even if you have the means to pay or you're on fixed income, they can finally resolve your tax burdens once and for all. So give them a call. Call them at 800-254-6000 for a private free consultation, or visit TNUSA, that stands for Tax Network, TNUSA.com/redacted. One more time, that's TNUSA.com/redacted.
We want to say thanks to all of you who are watching us live on YouTube on Rumble. Please, we are here live every day at 4 p.m. Eastern time. So thank you to the many tens of thousands of you watching us right now. Just hit that subscribe button. Turn on the little notification thing so you get a notification when we go live every day at 4 p.m. Eastern time.
Before we go, we would like to thank our viewer, Rich. He is at @no_gimmicks on X for pointing out that Clayton's lovely outfit today is reminiscent of Beetlejuice.
Hey.
And I like it.
Hey.
So this gave us a good chuckle. Thank you for sending that on.
Hey, come on, look at me. You want to get down to me? Say it three times. Come on now. Come on now. I think it's a good, it's a comfortable shirt.
It's a comfortable shirt.
It's a comfortable shirt. That's two Michael Keaton references in one thing. Can you put that back up here?
I mean, to be fair though, Alec Baldwin wore it too.
That's true. He was wearing it
a little bit.
Right, while he was alive.
He was wearing it while he was alive, and he put it on. He's like, come on, you can trust me. Come on, come on, come on.
Yep.
Beetlejuice. Thank you, Rich. Was it Rich that sent that in?
Yes, yeah, thanks, Rich. Thank you for the humor. That makes, it adds much needed levity to our show. Where we're going next, there's not a lot of levity. We're going to talk about the safety of the COVID-19 vaccines, and we cannot do it on this platform. So join us on another platform, you know where we'll be. Come there, because this is the first peer-reviewed study about what we do and do not know about the COVID-19 vaccines and what safety protocols were not followed and what data Big Pharma had but did not tell us. And as it relates to adverse events that are very serious, that's the most I can say right here. You're going to want to see it, because we're going to interview the author of this paper, the very first peer-reviewed study on this stuff. Serious business.
Okay, so we are continuing our stream right now on this other platform. It's run simultaneously, but they are a censorship-free platform over there. The one we are currently on YouTube loves to censor stuff. But we will be continuing our stream unfettered over there. So right now, we're going to have to say goodbye to YouTube. Much love to all of you guys. We'll see you back here tomorrow at 4 p.m. Eastern time if you choose not to join us for the rest of the show. Bye, YouTube. And hello to all of you on Rumble.
Well, we've been here all along. So
yes.
It's not like we've been ignoring you. We've been with you. We're so glad you're here. I cannot wait for to talk to this next author of this, again, the first peer-reviewed study about what was hidden in the clinical trials for the COVID-19 vaccine. We're not on YouTube anymore, so I can tell you. It includes deaths, hidden deaths, also people who just fell off their radar. It was fraud. There's no other way to put it. So we're going to talk in a minute to one of the lead authors. Dr. Peter McCullough, friend of the show, is also one of the authors of this study, but he's not who we're going to talk to tonight. The first time on the show, we're going to speak to Dr. Nathaniel Mead coming up. So, but before we do that,
we do have a store. If you'd like to support the show and pick up one of our I Will Not Comply hoodies or t-shirts, it's one of our top sellers, by the way. And you can pick up the redacted rebel flag if you like as well. And our friends Don't Let Friends Watch the Mainstream Media mug. So that's how you can kick off your morning. You can go over to redactedstore.com, and we do not mark the prices up at all. We try to keep them very, very close to at cost. So it just helps support the show a little bit. But I love the idea that we had a viewer write to us the other day saying that they were at the store and they were wearing a redacted hoodie, and one of the other, like just somebody randomly in the store, walked up to him and said, "You watch Redacted?" And it was, I don't know why, but that really meant the world to me, to think that like there's redacted viewers out there who might run into one another out there. And it's just amazing to me. So the tens of thousands of you that watch the show, you are not alone. If you'd like to support independent journalism, just go to redactedstore.com, check it out, see what we've got over there. We just added our brand new No Farmers, No Food t-shirt, which just rolled out this week. If you want to support the farmers, then you want to support keeping globalists out of our lives. Again, redacted.
Also,
okay.
We had a lot of people, the hat that I'm wearing right now was not on the store, and we had a lot of people. I don't know, Philip, if you can go to that really quick. This hat is now in the store. So if you guys want to get it, because we had a lot of people like, I want that hat. So it's awesome. In there.
Okay, it's in there now. It's available now. David got a first run of it. All right, redactedstore.com is the place to go. Redactedstore.com.
Well, the first of its kind peer-reviewed study calls on the halt of mRNA vaccines in the childhood vaccine schedule due to a lack of safety standards. This is the first peer-reviewed study on the COVID-19 vaccines, and one of the lead authors joins us today. We are speaking with Nathaniel Mead, an epidemiologist and public health research scientist. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks very much. It's a delight to be here.
So the paper is called COVID-19 mRNA Vaccines, Lessons Learned from the Registrational Trials and Global Vaccination Campaign. One of your co-authors is Peter McCullough, who's been on the show quite a bit. Can you summarize your findings and tell us exactly what you're asking from the government and the medical community?
So this is a comprehensive narrative review. So it's telling the story of the last few years from a scientific perspective to try to weave together the essential elements, especially in terms of adverse effects of the vaccines, and help people understand how they were misled by the clinical trials that were originally used to authorize these products. And those trials, we call them registrational trials because they got the products registered for the market. And also we looked at what transpired after what we consider to be a rushed authorization process, a rushed testing process. And we found that the vaccines are most definitely not safe, nor are they effective. And the effectiveness has gotten worse over time. But we have concluded that there has been a huge risk to the public from these gene-based injections. They were classified as gene therapy before the pandemic, and then they became rebranded as vaccines once the pandemic started. So these were products that have been studied as experimental cancer treatments for over 30 years. And my background is largely in the cancer field, so I was very interested in that aspect and how they got onto the market so quickly. And then the fact that they were placed in the same category as classical vaccines, when they should have been looked at as gene therapy products. And that's because they use a genetic code, which they insert into the body through the mRNA, which then generates a protein that stimulates the immune system. So they've also been called prodrugs. And I think the public would have looked at this very differently and considered the risks more seriously if these had been called drugs as opposed to vaccines, which is kind of interesting. The terminology of so many things has changed over time. Natural immunity was a term that was considered, we shouldn't even look at that. And many, many scientists were talking about other terms in the literature that got reframed over time. But the term vaccine itself was redefined even in Webster Dictionary. I think it was in 2020 or 2021. And so it just became something to stimulate the immune system, but that's very vague. You know, the old definition of the vaccine was a foreign protein that stimulates the immune system in the vaccine itself. It was a global experiment that went bad, basically. We looked at some of the issues involved in how the studies were misleading, and I think that was probably the most illuminating part of the paper. And we went into that in great detail.
Yes. Tell you what I thought was the most shocking? Because reading your paper, I'm going to just give you this personal story, because my son is in eighth grade. People called him an anti-vaxxer for not having taken the COVID vaccine as a child. And I wrote him up a summary of all of the research that has been done that proves that, one, more vaccination increases your chance of contracting COVID, which you mentioned here in the Cleveland study. The lack of research around the COVID vaccine, the lack of safety standards, everything is here. So if you, like me, have a child that's called an anti-vaxxer, this paper is basically all you need to go on, is for what we know and what we don't know. But this was new to me. You talked about how of the 170 COVID cases in the Pfizer trial, much of them were around faulty PCR tests. And the trials actually showed that more people were exhibiting symptomatic COVID but lacked a positive PCR test. So they were using faulty data to say that the vaccine was making it so you don't get symptomatic COVID. We know that the vaccine was not tested on transmission, but what they were using was basically whether you were coughing or sneezing and then had a positive test. So this is just one of many ways that this data was manipulated. This was shocking to me.
To me, that's what you just said is the most important piece, what you said at the end there. Measuring mild symptoms as an outcome when we're talking about a cough or a sneeze or, you know, maybe a rise in body temperature. You know, if it hadn't been for this pandemic, most people would have said, well, what's the big deal with that? I'll just go home and, you know, pop some vitamin C or, you know, whatever.
Take a nap.
Right. But because so much, I think, hysteria had been built up in the public's mind about this this virus, even when the infection fatality rate was so extremely low, even Anthony Fauci himself back in 2020 was saying it was 0.2% for the whole population. If you look at segments of the population, like younger people under age 60, which, you know, is classified as younger, you're elderly if you're over 65, I guess.
Mm-hmm. I'll take it.
The infection fatality rate was moving towards zero as you go younger and younger. And I said this many times early on. I said this in social media, and I got ridiculed by people who really didn't know anything about it. They weren't looking at the literature, but I kept saying, look, children have basically zero infection fatality rate. So their chances of dying is extremely low. Why are they being injected with an experimental, this was in 2021 when it was rolled out, why are they being injected with what is essentially an experimental agent? Because this is in a population that has not been tested for this. These younger, you know, you mentioned your child. And I think that that's probably the most egregious aspect. That's why we focus so much on the younger populations in this paper. We didn't talk a lot about the older populations, but just for the record, the frail elderly are much at extremely high risk of the adverse events, the serious adverse events, such as heart attacks, strokes, different kinds of strokes. And, you know, the trials themselves showed, when we looked at the reanalyses, because this is what happened, the trials were reported on, they were underreported in terms of the adverse events. And just for the record, the vaccine industry has a long history of what amounts to fraudulent reporting. They have typically only reported about 5% of adverse events in their trials. 5%. Now, that's because they want the public to focus on the positive. And so there was huge underreporting and underestimating of the risk in these
studies. Right. If I may, I'd like to point out this paragraph that shows that they lost track of nearly 400 study participants when that's not normal. And you calculated that based on the death rate that they reported versus just normal death rate of a population of this size or a sample size. So where did they go?
Right. And, you know, that's what you just pointed out also is something that we don't really know if they deliberately left those people out, let go of them, you know, if they had bad outcomes and then they were just dropped, you know, from the, especially from the intervention side, the vaccine side. We don't know. We just know that there was a big chunk of the population that got omitted from the final analysis, and that was a serious problem.
Right. And so you present this myocarditis data that shows how prevalent it is in young people by number of doses. And it's shocking when you see it. I'm going to show this chart on the screen here. When you see it broken out by dosage and by age, obviously the risk for young people of having a dangerous case of COVID is so low, but the risk of this myocarditis is much higher. So you just point out that the risk-benefit calculation doesn't add up, particularly for the young.
Yeah, it's especially problematic for adolescent teens who are very active, but any adult under age 40 is at risk of serious heart damage. These are dangerous products because they can generate spike protein that gets concentrated in the heart muscle and stays there. The mRNA is encoded in a lipid nanoparticle delivery system, which protects it so that it can get in deep into tissues. Basically, it's designed to get into any tissue in the body, as you know, and it can then stay there for at least 6 months, generating inflammation in that area, which is what myocarditis is. And myocarditis among adolescent teens has been calculated to be somewhere between 2 and 3% following the injection. Now, most people say, well, 2 or 3%, that doesn't sound very bad. But if you multiply it times the millions of children who have been injected, and what we found was that the myocarditis risk is approximately 37 times the risk associated with SARS-CoV-2 infection, 37 times, because the SARS-CoV-2 infection risk is 0.06% so for that same age group. As you go older, the risk drops a bit, but it's still pretty substantial, and it explains why so many professional soccer players and basketball players have reported heart pain and then fallen on the court. These are serious issues that are affecting especially young active people. Which is really tragic, because the advice that's being given to them is, okay, you have this heart pain, don't get physically active. That's the advice that's given. And my own neighbor in Chapel Hill had this. He's a young guy in his late 30s, mm-hmm. Developed horrible heart pain. And I remember coming home once from doing some errands, and I saw him just sitting there with his pain, hands on his chest. It's heartbreaking, no pun intended, but it's heartbreaking to see this. And elderly people also get the heart problems, but it's a little different. It's different in the way that they manifest.
Well, something not mentioned in your paper is that researchers in Europe have found that you can test for troponins that will tell you if there's heart inflammation. And so if you do that, well, first you have to acknowledge that there's a problem. But if you do that, you can save people from exerting themselves if they have inflammation. But the step in between is acknowledging it's a problem, which doesn't happen. Something that I have constantly wondered when you see people talk about the death rate in the vaccine trials or the adverse events, you know, you always wonder, well, is this normal? Does this just happen when a new vaccine hits the market? But you point out that the swine flu vaccine was pulled after being associated with Guillain-Barré syndrome at a rate of 1 in 100,000. Rotavirus was withdrawn because of a contraindication with 1 or 2 in 10,000, we definitely have seen a higher rate of adverse reactions from the COVID vaccine, and yet it has not been pulled. So this addresses the question, is this normal? Clearly it's not.
No, it's definitely not normal. I think it's important to point out that the main reason the public has been misled is if you go into the published medical literature, you'll find plenty of studies that suggest that they are safe and effective. But these are observational studies. And as we briefly cover in our paper, there were huge methodological problems with the way those studies were conducted. And they were... The classic example of a technique that is used to get what the vaccine industry wants out of a study. And by the way, many of these studies are funded directly by the Gates Foundation and other vaccine enterprise entities. The technique that they're using is they use the CDC's guideline for what constitutes vaccination status. So you are vaccinated at 2 weeks. You've heard this, 14 days after the second injection. So anything that happens before that time, even after the first injection, is ignored as an adverse event that applies to the vaccinated. So if you, for example, have a very serious issue like a heart attack within the 14 days after the second injection, you are counted as unvaccinated in these studies. And these are huge. These are huge studies. I'm telling you, like a million people or hundreds of thousands of people. So they look very impressive. But if you were to look at either all-cause mortality or even COVID-related mortality, it's not counted as vaccinated if it happens during that 14-day period. So what happens is it flip-flops the picture and people get a misperception of what the studies are reporting. And there are tons of these studies. There are also a lot of studies using simulated populations, you know, artificial populations. So they're not even real populations. And those are all funded by the Gates Foundation. I just want to mention that we also used a lot of Corinne Mickel's research, which was published in the International Journal of Vaccine Theory, Practice, and Research. It's an excellent journal. It's one of the few journals that has not been captured by the pharmaceutical industry. Lancet and many other journals, unfortunately, have been, through various financial channels and through their boards, under the influence of the pharmaceutical industry in a big way. And so that also leads to a skewing of the picture because you see a lot of studies that are basically fraudulent being published in those journals.
Yes. Yeah. We had on last week, Regina Watil, who published an entire book about the Fisman study that was used to institute vaccine mandates in Canada. And it's shocking how much fiction was used for policy. One thing I want to just talk about your recommendation, your overall recommendation in this paper, and then ask you how the paper got funded in the first place, because we know so many scientists have tried to bring this research to light, and the medical community seems really uncurious about it, if not maybe a brick wall. In the end, you say that this should be removed from the childhood vaccine schedule, and also just the trials should be examined more closely. You say that in the risk of a child dying from COVID is near zero or 0.0003, but the risk of permanent heart damage from the vaccine is 2.2%. Well, clearly that is an unfavorable risk-benefit analysis. What do I have it right? Is that specifically what you want, is these vaccines to be halted?
Yes. I mean, it should be considered a legal matter for the children because there's absolutely no data to support their taking it at all. You could make an argument there is for older people, but there isn't for younger people. And so that's clear. But the fact that the trials themselves showed a fourfold increase in serious adverse events, cardiac serious adverse events like heart attack and other, you know, thrombotic problems with the heart, that also is sufficient grounds for getting it off the market on a global scale, because that's causing untold amounts of misery for many people. And then we have the neurological and all the other problems. So yes, we feel that the data is strong enough from a risk perspective to have these removed, and that's what we tried to show in the paper. This paper took me all of 2023 to write, and I had no funding. Invited some co-authors to come in and join me and help inform further evolution of the paper. We submitted it to a peer review medical journal, went through the peer review process. It was rejected initially. We then went to another journal and had even more reviewers. So we had a couple of reviewers the first time, we had 8 reviewers the second time. These are independent expert reviewers, and they all gave feedback. And when I include the editors who were involved, I had well over 200 comments that I had to respond to. And fortunately, having such a brilliant team of co-authors, I was able to enlist their participation in getting this answered and getting us to final publishing form. But it was quite a difficult process, and we had no funding. We just decided this was a labor of love. These are serious issues. People are being hurt by these products, these gene-based products. I think it's really tragic because when you look at the fact that, and I'm sure this has been discussed, maybe Dr. McCullough discussed this on your show before. Dr. McCullough is our senior author. But the fact that the process that was used during the clinical trials to produce these vaccines was different from the process that was used to release it to the public is very important, because the product that was released to the public was a different product. It was never actually tested in the trials. The product released to the public was contaminated with bacterial DNA and contained an SV40 promoter that promotes cancer. People can argue with it, but we provide the evidence in the paper that it is associated with cancer. If you go and look for a fact check, of course, it will deny it, because the fact checks are all pharmaceutically driven. And so this is a very important issue, which down the road could lead to more cancers and autoimmune disease. And I think the general public needs to start thinking in terms of very proactive prevention in terms of autoimmune diseases and cancer, doing everything they can to prevent that. So let me just, may I give you one example of how sure. this relates to children?
Sure.
So with children, for example, there's something called Epstein-Barr virus, which mm-hmm. I'm sure you've heard of, associated with chronic fatigue. It's very common for children to have multiple bouts with Epstein-Barr virus because it's so common. It's in the system already. If the immune system gets a little weak, then a child could have an infection and they'll show the chronic fatigue symptoms. That infection is associated with an increased risk of lymphomas, okay? Mm-hmm. Lymphomas are happening at a higher rate among children. And we think that it's because when you look at something that has these inflammatory effects and disrupts the immune system in the ways that we outline in the paper, this then plays an interactive role with a predisposition to something like lymphoma, okay, or other cancers. But that's why we're seeing high rates of lymphomas, and these are aggressive lymphomas. And I personally know of one of my best friends in Durham, North Carolina, went through this with his family. His child just finished 2 years of chemotherapy. We're celebrating this weekend coming up that he's ended it. But so many young people and older people are suffering from these things because they have a predisposition. And it's also true with people who have had cancers that have been in remission for a long time. They're suddenly becoming activated. And even after 20 years of being in remission, you know, breast cancer will suddenly get activated. So these are very serious issues, and we are being, I think the message is to our culture, to our society, is let's move in the direction of prevention authentically in terms of keeping our immune systems healthy and our bodies healthy. And we can then, hopefully avoid a catastrophe on a large scale with this down the road. Dr. McCullough says that it's two years is the window for someone who gets a classical vaccine. But if you get a gene therapy product, it's about 5 years after your last injection where you want to watch for serious problems happening. So,
well, that's good to know. Well, I want to thank you for this study. It's fascinating, and I encourage everybody to read it for themselves. Keep it marked, download it, because again, if you're the kind of person who gets pushed in your life about the safety of the COVID vaccine, it's all here. what was known and what was unknown, what was followed and what was not. So thank you again for coming on Redacted. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you. It's an honor to be here. Thank you.
That's going to do it for us today on Redacted. Thank you so much for watching. Thank you for being here. We will be here tomorrow. Remember, the show is live every Monday through Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern. Please like, subscribe, share. We really appreciate your comments, your patronage. Thank you for being here. We'll see you tomorrow, everyone.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.